Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Yes, The Best of My Love. What a great song. No, this isn't, I'm not going to be playing records for you here as we go on, but we are going to be talking about a show where you can hear that. Welcome, everybody. This is Behind the Curtain podcast. This is Paul Listnick with you, and I know you're used to hearing me do politics on WGN-TV, but I get to play theater here on the WGN podcast. So joining me now, it'll be a really busy show, and joining me for our first show is the cast and the director choreographer of a fantastic show called 8-Track at Theo Ubique. It's one of my favorite theaters in the city. If you've never been there, you need to try it out. Actually, it's in Evanston, up on Howard, but you can have dinner and watch the show and be at a little table, and man, it's kind of like the old days. It's so fabulous. But let me introduce my guests to you. The director and choreographer of 8-Track is Jamal Howard. He's with me. And Patrick O'Keefe and Jasmine Lacey Young, two of the primary featured stars in 8-Track. You all do such a great job. I welcome all of you. Jamal, I'm going to start with you and just sort of say, listen, this has like 50 songs, maybe more. I haven't actually counted a ton of songs. Well, it's got 50 ways to leave your lover. That's why the number 50 is in my head. And so many, Car Wash and Close to You. I know it was conceived by Rick Sieber, but who put these songs together? And I'm sure you're hearing from people to say, how about this song? You missed it.
Yeah, it was Rick Sieber who put these songs together and figured out how to make them all work in that sense. And then we played with the story and embellished some things and figured out how we were going to weave through those songs.
And there is some story to it. Patrick, of course, one of the things I get out of kick out of you and Jasmine, I remembered I knew every one of these songs. I lived through every one of these songs. And then I looked at you guys and saying, I'm not sure you did. So Patrick, were you a fan of and familiar with the music of the 70s? Or did you have to kind of get up to speed by going, oh, it's a little before my time?
I was a big fan. I'd say mostly all the disco songs are ones that I've known forever and ones that I just listen to you to have fun and turn on at a party. But there were a lot of songs, especially the ones that I sing, that I had never heard before. And it was really fun to kind of go down that rabbit hole and discover the ones that I didn't know.
And Jasmine, I guess a similar question for you as well, but you know, they kind of turn to you when it's time to maybe belt a song. I'm thinking of a song I'm going to play later, I Am Woman, which you do so phenomenally. But how about you as well? Always a fan of the 70s, or did you look at this and say, man, Helen Reddy, there were some great artists in this show?
I grew up on this music. My mom has always been a huge fan of the 70s. And so, the Carpenters were, you know, my heroes when I was younger.
Oh, me too.
I loved them so much. Like Patrick said, some songs that I was like, oh, I haven't heard this one. You know, like Convoy, things like this. I had such, like, cult following with those songs. But for the majority, I knew all of them. And, you know, getting to do these iconic songs, you know, you got to know where they come from and who started them, you know, and, you know, made them famous. So it's really fun to go back to that era.
And Jamal, you know, I'm sure you've attended a lot of the shows. Obviously, you're there, but things are underway. Mm-hmm. What kind of comments are you getting from audience members? Do you get a lot of folks like me who live through it and are just, they just want to talk to you and the cast members about, oh, let me tell you what I was doing at that time, which is probably illegal. Or you know, is there a sense of, boy, it was just so great to open this up. I went one night with my brother and my sister-in-law, and across from me was a family, and they had, you know, clearly the parents had lived through it, but they had some little kids with them. Kind of reaches out for everybody, Jamal.
Yeah, the show does a really good job entertaining all different ages, but the majority of the people we get out are people that lived through the 70s, and I get all sorts of comments that are just so, like, how'd you get that right? Or, oh, that person is exactly like somebody I knew, or just different things like that. People are really just feeling like they're reliving the decade. through the show.
And Patrick, I know you've done shows like Mamma Mia, and so you know you've been in these sort of songbook kinds of shows. Is that something you like to do, or is this just kind of a way to put some stress aside for a while? And I saw you in Head Over Heels, by the way, with Coke Candy. So is it all about these musical forays for you?
I wouldn't say I search for them, but it's always fun when a show has one sort of central theme or something driving it. So like with Head Over Heels, it was all about the Go-Go's. And with this one, it's all about the 70s, obviously. So it's great to have kind of a North Star that we're following. And we can always watch videos from the 70s, watch Sonny and Cher or watch Soul Train, and have something just to kind of like immerse yourself in and feel like you're in the world of.
Thank you for saying Sonny and Cher. Today, people know about Cher. They're not sure Sonny was around. He was. And Jasmine, I know you've done Legally Blonde and My Way. I'm sort of curious when you get in these shows. I mean, man, in fact, I believe in your bio, you said something like, live theater is back. This has to be so, and it's such an intimate space at the Ubuque. It's got to be so great to be back with people.
Yes, honestly, in regards to the question you asked Patrick, I love these types of shows. I do search for them. Like, I want to just sing and be in this world and just, like, know exactly what kind of play that I'm in. You know what I mean? Like, we know so much about the 70s. There was a lot of material to look back on, So, and again, like with Legally Blonde, too, that is so heavily influenced with the 2000s. Like, these are time periods. These are period pieces in itself, and those are so much fun. And singing in the different styles, it's everything I ever want as an actor singer. This is just, it's been a blast.
And there was something about the one of your costumes, but it reminded me that, and I think, Jamal, that there was no Cass Elliot songs in this, but I just kind of looked at Jasmine and I could totally see her doing a Cass Elliot number in there. Dream a Little Dream of Me, one of those fantastic things. Jasmine, I'll ask you, have you heard that from anybody else, or am I the first to say to you, like, you do incredible with her numbers?
No, I haven't. I have not heard that, but thank you. That's such an honor.
Yeah, I thought I was. I
loved
her.
I would love to hear that.
Oh, she was so amazed. So, Jamal, why didn't you have any Cass Elliott songs? She was 70s.
It's not. I couldn't choose. I was given the show. I couldn't choose what songs.
You're a director. You've got the power to just go, hey, you know what? We're taking that out and we're putting this in. No, I know you can't really.
Something we did was we kind of stuck to the music that was given to us to give us a really strong framework and to win those choices. I think they actually helped us create some things that maybe we wouldn't have if we just decided to do whatever we wanted to.
It's a good point. And, Patrick, again, and there are themes in this show. I mean, there's sort of a war theme that goes on. But it is funny that you said you sort of think back to the Love Child thing, because your costumes and everything, to me, sort of said, yeah, you're the hippie guy who probably, back during that time, if you were around, I'm not going to say what you were smoking, but you were probably hanging with your friends, having a good time, and really getting down this music. And we kind of feel that with you in this show.
Absolutely, yeah. I think our costumer and really everyone involved with the show did a great job of making it super realistic. It's not a cheesy kind of, we're not winking, saying, hey, it's 70s. It feels very lived in, and it feels like each of us really stepped right out of the decade and has a backstory. And like you said, yeah, I probably was with my friends smoking, whatever we were smoking.
Right. That's part of your character development, right? Okay, guys, let's just assume we've been smoking. By the way, who has something here? We can try it. No. And Jasmine, one of the things that I'm curious, I know this is probably Jamal's question, but I'll ask you. What I really appreciated about the show, and of course, back then it was free love and all this kind of stuff, but this show presents, at least to me, it presented same-sex relationships, different-sex relationships. I mean, that was part of the theme. I'm sort of curious, were you given some freedom by Jamal, the director, to take things in whatever directions you wanted, or was that something in the script?
Yeah, so I mean, Jamal and our assistant director Jay had a vision of where these stories were going to go, and then it was a collaborative effort in finding out, oh, what can be this moment between you and Mia, or whatever, and getting to change some of the tones of the songs, like my song with Patrick, doing Just the Way You Are together, and making it about our best friendship is like, it was just really fun getting to take these songs and have people know them and getting to put a story on top of it that you wouldn't necessarily expect. But definitely all Jamal. But there was so much collaboration with this show, too, which was so much fun. And just getting to do fun conversations about, like, let's see if this works. Let's see if this doesn't, you know.
Well, to me, it all worked. And I have to tell you, in fact, I didn't have a clip of Just the Way You Are. That was one of the ones I was hoping for because I did want to play something with you two together. But I couldn't do that. With time running, I just want to let everybody know. And by the way, even if you sit through the first act of the show and you say, okay, this is kind of fun, it's the second act, I just got to say, that knocks your socks off. So, Jamal, congratulations on directing that. That is such the energy and the power of the second act. You just walk out. I was dancing with my brother and my sister. It was just fantastic.
Oh,
yay.
So 8-Track is at Thank Theo Ubuque you. Theater. It's up at 721 Howard Street. It's playing through January 23rd. Jamal, still the same date? No extensions or anything?
No extensions yet.
Well, okay. Then we're going to have to look for that. Cool. And you can look for that by going to the website, theo-u.org, theo-u.org. Or get tickets at 773-939-4101. You'll find that information also in the description of this podcast. I wish I had more time, but I don't on this one. So Jamal Howard, Patrick O'Keefe, Jasmine Lacey Young, I am sure we will talk on a future project. Congratulations on this show. I just had a blast. And even though we're catching you towards the end of the run, I just wanted to talk to you and say, good job. I really loved it. Thank you so much. We're going to go out with a little Jasmine
Thank
music,
you.
By the way. Hey, here's a little Jasmine.
Oh, yes. I am wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Oh, yes, I pay the price, but look how much I've gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. I am invincible. I am woman.
All right, and after that high-energy show, we go to another high-energy show, but one with a heck of a lot of laughing, playing at the Broadway Playhouse, and it's called The Play That Goes Wrong. And yeah, everything that can go wrong does, except this play goes right. It gets it right for Chicago. What a treat, and what a great evening out at the theater as we all come out of this pandemic and just want to find a way to laugh. Joining me to talk about this fantastic show, two of the stars, Matt Mueller, who plays Chris, and Kelly O'Sullivan, who plays Sandra. Guys, thank you for joining me. I'm going to tell you something. Let me come to you, Matt. Talk a little bit about the plot of this play. I can't make my point without this. What is this farce all about?
Sure. So it's the Cornley University Drama Society who is putting on this play called the Murder at Haversham Manor, and they're very serious about it. They're thrilled to be getting to do this show, and from the get go, things start to go awry, and they do their best to get through this show, no matter sort of what falls down or who falls over or whatever may happen. And it's sort of dare anyone to not laugh if they come see it. It's a joy to see. It's a joy to do. And it's just very, very funny. It's kind of as simple as that.
So. Yeah, it's just laugh your socks off. And Kelly, so your character, Sandra, but here's what's interesting. When I just started to kind of get together, do my homework, all of a sudden I'm going through my program from opening night and I'm going, why don't I see Kelly O'Sullivan in here? Because there's a page before we ever get to you guys in which we're actually, as Matt was just saying, this is like a play within a play. So before we realize who you really are, we actually find out who your actor name is and the character that you're playing. We're two levels away from Kelly O'Sullivan.
That's right. Yeah, you get to read Sandra's bio, which is interesting. And all of our headshots are really interesting, too. Sort of amateur, but people trying really hard to be professionals or seem like professionals.
So man, I got to tell you, I'm going to be candid with you. I am not a fan of like British farce kinds of shows. And so,
okay.
Yeah, so I'm just being, and I'm saying that because the night that I came, I was like, I don't know. Well, I want to see it. We'll get there. It was so funny that either I am completely wrong about my hesitancy of British farce shows, or this show just does away with everything that concerned me. I laughed throughout the show. And I think, Matt, it's the way that so many of you kind of break that fourth wall, play with the audience. You add that level in there that is just incredible fun.
Oh, I'm thrilled to hear that. Yeah, it's you know, I am a fan of the British farce.
You
I'm
should
also
be.
Actually a fan of the kind of, you know, the British Agatha Christie murder mystery kind of thing, which is, you know, this is a takeoff of. But it's you know, and even I think people could think, oh, this is going to be like. You hear the murder Havisham Manor and you kind of think PBS hour kind of dry and,
right.
It's just so silly. And the thing that A makes the show work and is the engine for the show. And I mean, it is the audience and the audience interaction. I mean, it's from the get go, the energy back and forth between the audience and everybody up on stage is really what fires it up and pushes it along. And that's where the joy and like the enjoyment and the hilarity comes out of. You're absolutely right. It's like a roller coaster, basically. Once you get on, you don't get off until the end. So,
and what's so great is, I mean, sometimes you break that fourth wall with the audience, like Colton Adams, who plays Trevor. He does it all because, and again, he's two levels away, right? Colton is two levels away from who he is. We think he's a sound guy. We think he's all these things that he is, and yet he's talking to the audience sometimes because he's just mad at us, or you're talking to us because you're mad at us and whatever. But I have to give a shout out to Jared Webb, who plays Max, because he's the one character of all who, like, throughout the whole show knows we're there and loves the fact that we're there and loves connecting with us throughout. It is just hysterical. Kelly, when I come to you, talk about your role, because your character has some issues during the show and we never know what's going to happen to you next.
Yeah, I like to think of my character as being really ambitious, that she has a very particular way that she wants the play to go, and her scene partners may not be in alignment with the way that she wants the show to go. And then she undergoes, I would say, one of the biggest mishaps that happens in the show, and I don't want to give it away, but
right.
It involves a lot of physicality and then the entrance of another actor coming in. So, yeah, it's super fun.
So, Mac, I know that, again, people have to see the show. I can't to even describe some of the things they're going to see. A, number one, I'm ruining the surprise. I won't do that. But I guess I'm going to ask a couple of questions in this way. First of all the things that go wrong, does anything ever go wrong, Matt, that's not supposed to go wrong, but the audience doesn't know it because we just think it's one more thing that went wrong?
Right. Yeah, the short answer is yes. It's like any other theater show. There are things that you know, there are mishaps and little things that happen. But it is sort of one of the beauties of this show that when that kind of stuff does happen, because we're in this world of things falling down and Lord knows what's going to actually go wrong, it's very hard to tell what's going wrong and what's going right and what should be going right and should be going wrong. So I think there's maybe a little bit of an extra freedom in there. But it is so one of the cool things about doing the show is it is so very precise, kind of the math of it all, it's, you know, it's a highly choreographed, very efficient kind of funny machine that we all get to be a part of. So things do go wrong, but because of the immense wrongness of the show, it's very hard to tell, I'd say.
And, Matt, I'm going to stay with you on this, because if something goes wrong, here's the thing. Because your characters often, quote-unquote, break character to react, the truth is you could probably actually laugh at something, which is Matt laughing at it, but we'll never know, because to us it could be Chris. It could be any of three different people laughing at it when you laugh. If that has, so do you ever actually laugh and it's for real, but we don't get it?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. That's another part of it. It can be, especially with these brilliant people who we get to do the show with, it can be very, very difficult to keep a straight face throughout the 2 hours of the show. So that's all. I mean, that's just another perk of getting to do a show like this with the people we get to do it with.
Yeah.
And just, you know, based on what the reaction from the audience is, that can also, you know, tickle your own personal funny bone, whether it's Chris or Inspector Carter, whoever it is. There's a lot of chance for hilarity and laughing on on both sides of the fourth wall, I'd say.
And Kelly, I break
almost every night. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I broke for the first time last night in a place that I had never broken before. And it's because we had an understudy go on, and he was doing so many new interesting things that I had to turn myself fully upstage, just hoping that the audience wouldn't see this very serious actor, totally cracking up.
I love it. So that's Kelly realizing that your character actor wouldn't break so that you can't. That's great. And I have to ask you, Kelly, as well. Look, there's things, again, without giving too much away, let's just say things involve floors and ceilings and, you know, whatever, and things that get ramp-like as a result. And as I'm watching this, first of all, I think the audience gets frightened for the characters who are in this. You have to get special training. It's almost like fight training, right? I mean, there have to be very specialized training to get through something like this, because no set is like this in a typical show.
That's right. That's why we went to New York to rehearse the play on the set off Broadway, because there's no way to rehearse it just in a bare room. And we rehearsed with actors who have played these roles for years so that they could give us all of the tips that they've acquired, all the way that they preserve their bodies. Because like you say, it is actually very dangerous unless you learn it in a very choreographed, precise way.
Well, as my review said, the play that goes wrong gets it right for Chicago. And it's at the Broadway Playhouse, which, by the way, I love that theater. I do a show called Backstage, which we often get to. We haven't, you know, because of COVID, we haven't taped it in a while. But I tape it in your space and on your stage. And so I just love that environment. And the play that goes wrong is at the Broadway Playhouse through February 13th with tickets at BroadwayInChicago.com. And, I made the point I did earlier, even though it was kind of dangerous to say, hey, I'm not a big fan of British farce, because I say that because if people are fans of British farce, well, they're going to love it anyway. But the good news is, if you were like I was, then this is the show to see, because it will just defy any concerns you have, and you will just absolutely crack up. I absolutely loved it, and you guys are just amazing in it. And let your fellow cast members know, they all just do an incredible job, and you all need to stay safe up there, because anything can happen.
That's great. Thank you.
Matt Mueller, Kelly O'Sullivan. The show is The Play That Goes Wrong. Don't miss it. BroadwayInChicago.com. Thanks, guys. Have a great rest of the run. I would say break a leg, but for this show, I'm kind of scared to say that.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And now we take a look at a show called Wellesley Girl. It's playing at the Compass Theater, which is at Theater Wit, 1229 West Belmont. And yeah, it's about 90 minutes, no intermission. But, you know, I typically cover politics on the TV side of things, and this is my theater world. But this show brings those worlds together. You'll understand as I talk to my next guest. James Fleming is the director of Wellesley Girl. James, thanks for being with me. And congratulations. This show is going to play till February 5th. I find it's hard to describe. Well, what I know is this show takes place in the future, right? So talk to me about politics and social issues in the future.
That's right. Yeah. So thanks for having me on. The play takes place in 2465, and America has been reduced to just four small towns in Massachusetts, which are still committed to upholding the political practices of the United States. So they've been living this way for several hundred years, and when the play begins, an army arrives at the gates claiming that they're the real America, and we watch as the citizens of these four towns, all of whom are required to serve in Congress according to the Constitution, have to decide what to do about this army at the gates.
So as people watch it, how much do you anticipate that this show will resonate in terms of the current kind of political climate we've been living in the last period of years? Is that the point? Do we kind of go through this and feel like, yeah, this is what we've been dealing with?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that Brendan Pelsu, the playwright, is interested in our contemporary political moment, and in particular the divisiveness that's arisen in our body politic. I think that he recognizes that a lot of arguments are driven by passion and fear. So I think we look at some contemporary analogs, certainly in terms of the rise of radicalization on both the left and the right in America. And there's certainly parallels to be drawn. I'd also say that it's about a more primal question than our contemporary moment. What does it mean to live in a democracy at all? What does it mean to be a citizen in a democracy? And what is your responsibility in terms of service to your community when you're living amongst society? When do you make decisions out of self-interest? And when do you pursue collective prosperity? I think the play is touching on really primal questions about self-absorption versus collective good.
And the truth is, those are questions today. I mean, the questions about the democracy.
Oh, my
exactly,
God.
I mean, we're living it. We couldn't be living it anymore, and that it's going to stay relevant for a while. Now, so for folks who are listening, go, politics, I don't know. So let me ask you, does Brandon in his writing, you're the director, does the play lean left or lean right, or is it really not about that, and people of all points of view will be okay as they sit through it?
I it's my sincere hope that whatever your political beliefs, there is a place for you to participate in this story. I think it's an opportunity to contemplate the points of view of your fellow citizens and understand why people feel the way they do, and understand what motivates people to make the choices they make. We're obviously, you know, this play was originally programmed for the summer of 2020. And obviously, we could not have imagined the past couple of years that we've lived through. But I think that these questions, you know, in our current moment are more timely than ever in terms of asking, you know, what do you owe to yourself? And when do you need to claim your own freedom versus when do you need to give up some of your freedoms in order for the good of society?
Yeah, I'm almost thinking, had this been written later, the playwright could have probably opened this on January 6th, 20. And I don't mean open it as a play.
God.
I mean, the first scene could have been January 6th, you know, 2021, basically sending the message, what is democracy? And the thing is about this, and as I understand it, the characters have their own points of view, but we sort of get the sense as audience members that nobody is neither right nor wrong.
That's right, and I think what the play realizes is that when you're making decisions for a collective and as a collective, you won't be able to have all of the information you need in order to make the, you know, quote unquote right decision. Every moment we're doing the best we can, and that's what it means to self-govern. That's what it means to take on the weight of decision making in a democracy, right? And to live in a democracy means that you believe that our community has the capacity to self-govern. And what that means is that you're going to have to live with people with whom you disagree. And you're going to have to do your best to make the best decision possible with the information you have at the time. And you're going to have to be ready to pivot if that decision does not go as you planned.
Well, I don't think there's any question that this is a show that Brandon, in writing it, probably couldn't have predicted where things were going to go, but it couldn't be more relevant now. The show is Wellesley Girl. It's at the Compass Theater at Theater Wit, 1229 West Belmont. It plays through February 5th. Tickets at compasstheater.com. Compass has two S's and theater is spelled the proper way, T-R-E at the end. Compasstheater.org. I'm sorry, compasstheater.org. James Fleming, the director of Wellesley Girl, congratulations on the show. Have a great run, and thank you for giving people a lot to think about.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Take care. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's P-A-U-L-L-I-S-N-E-K. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.